All right, get ready for your deep dive on COP28. A whole bunch of stuff this time, huh? Articles, reports, even a YouTube video.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, looks like someone wants the inside scoop on this whole climate summit thing.
Well, they came to the right place then.
They sure did.
What really stood out to me going through your sources was how they show the human side of COP28. I mean, we have all the big official stuff like the agreements and pledges, but also this person's experience just navigating this huge E event.
It's crazy. 200,000 people. That's basically a mini city, like a city completely dedicated to climate action.
It's incredible.
But okay, before we get ahead of ourselves,
Yeah.
let's back up for a sec. The 28th conference of the party is COP28. You know, it didn't just appear out of nowhere.
Exactly. It's like the culmination of decades of research, scientific research, political debates, and frankly, growing sense of urgency about climate change. I mean, the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change,
Yeah.
they've been sounding the alarm for years. Their reports. Those are what provide the scientific foundation for these global negotiations.
Okay, so we have the scientists raising the alarm bells, the UN steps in and provides a framework, the UNFCCC.
Right.
And then we get these massive COP meetings where all the countries are trying to figure out what to actually DO.
Yeah.
But COP28 felt different, right? Even the YouTuber you sent mentioned that.
It did. This COP, you see, it took place right after, or in the shadow of, I guess you could say, the global stocktake,
Okay.
which basically confirmed what a lot of people were already thinking, which is we are not on track to meet the Paris Agreement goals.
And remind us, the Paris Agreement, that was
Oh, right. So that was that landmark agreement back in 2015,
2015, okay.
where pretty much every country agreed, well, pledged, to limit global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels.
Okay, so high stakes going into this COP. Everybody knew something big had to happen. Did it? I guess that's what we're here to find out. Let's look at what actually went down in Dubai.
For the first time ever, the final agreement at a COP, it actually mentioned transitioning away from fossil fuels.
Whoa, okay.
So that was a huge EE win, at least for some people,
Yeah.
especially after years of, intense debate and pushback from all those oil-producing nations.
That's a pretty big turning point. But the YouTuber you sent over, they mentioned being a bit skeptical, right? Like, is this real change or just like fancy wording?
Yeah, that's a valid question. I mean, there are definitely a lot of people wondering if that language is strong enough or
Yeah.
whether it'll actually lead to a quick phase out of fossil fuels.
Right.
Plus, the devil's always in the details. How is this transition actually going to work? What's the timeline?
Yeah, we'll definitely have to see how this plays out. What else happened at COP28?
Well, there were some pretty big pledges. Countries committed to triple global renewable energy capacity
Wow.
by 2030,
That's
which is a massive undertaking. It's going to require a lot of investment, political will to
Yeah.
actually make that happen.
Investment. Oh, speaking of which, the YouTuber mentioned something about a loss and damage fund. What is that all about?
That was another big thing at COP28.
Okay.
Well, it's a fund designed to compensate developing countries for the loss and damage they're already seeing because of climate change.
Ah, I see.
I mean, just think about it. Some countries are dealing with sea level rise, extreme weather events. They're on the front lines of this whole crisis,
Yeah.
but they often have the fewest resources to cope.
It's like acknowledging that there's like a climate debt owed to these countries.
Exactly. It's about climate justice, recognizing that developed countries who have historically, contributed the most to greenhouse gas emissions,
Right.
they have a responsibility to support those who are, well, being disproportionately impacted by the consequences.
But even with this new fund, isn't there still a massive funding gap?
Absolutely. The Loss and Damage Fund, it's definitely a step in the right direction, but it's not clear how much money will actually be available or how it will be distributed. And just more broadly, the financial commitments made at COP28, well, they fall short of what's actually needed to meet the Paris Agreement goals. I mean, we're talking trillions of dollars needed to, well, to finance that global transition to a low carbon economy.
Okay, so we're celebrating this win with transitioning away from fossil fuels, but there are still a lot of questions about how we actually get there.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But remember, COP28 wasn't just about these high-level negotiations and financial pledges. Your YouTube video, it showed us all the different kinds of people who were there pushing for change.
Oh, yeah, it wasn't just politicians and diplomats, right? There were like indigenous groups sharing their traditional knowledge about living in harmony with nature.
Right.
And youth activists demanding action.
Yeah. Yeah.
And scientists sharing their latest research.
And that's what makes COP28 so interesting. It's not just about what's being decided in those, you know, closed door meetings. It's about all this activism, the pressure from civil society and all the different voices demanding a more just and sustainable future.
Okay, so that brings us back to the YouTuber and their experience. Sounds like they were just blown away by, well, by the energy and all the different people at COP28.
Definitely.
But they also mentioned some concerns about, well, about
whether all those voices were really being heard.
Right, like were the indigenous groups, youth activists, women, were they genuinely included in making decisions, or was it more for show?
Yeah, that's a question a lot of people have been asking, and it's a good one. I mean, representation is important, yeah, but it needs to be more than just having a seat at the table. It's about having real power and influence.
Right, right.
And, well, that often means challenging existing power structures.
So the YouTuber story actually leads to a much bigger question. Who gets to decide the future? Who has the power to say how we deal with this global crisis?
That's where things get really fascinating. Because COP28, even with all its complexities and imperfections, well, it showed us that the fight for climate action isn't just happening in those negotiation rooms. It's happening in the streets, in communities, in the hearts and minds of people all over the world.
Okay, so what does this all mean for you listening right now? How do you fit into this complex global story?
Well, that's what we're going to be talking about next.
Yeah.
Because even though COP28 might feel far removed from your everyday life, the decisions made there, the actions taken or not taken, they will have an impact, a big impact, on your future and the future of generations to come.
All right, stick with us as we continue this deep dive. We're going to explore how this global summit actually connects to your life and what you can do to be a part of the solution. So we've talked about how COP28 is part of a much bigger story, a global movement that's been building for a while.
Definitely. And your sources actually lay out a pretty clear path of how we got to this point. Remember that YouTube video?
Oh, yeah.
It mentioned all those different people at COP28.
Right. All those voices.
Pushing for change.
Yeah. Indigenous groups, youth activists, scientists. It made me wonder, like, when did all of this start? When did climate change become this, well, this global issue that brings so many different people together?
Well, I'd say the seeds were planted back in the late 80s.
Okay.
When the IPCC was formed. The
Intergovernmental
Panel on Climate Change.
Right.
They're the ones who assess all the research on climate change.
Right.
And it was their early reports that really solidified the scientific consensus that, well, that humans were warming the planet.
So the science was becoming clear, but it seems like it took a while for the world to really catch on.
Oh, yeah. There was definitely resistance, people questioning the science, you know, powerful interests pushing back against any kind of regulations.
Of course.
But the evidence just kept piling up, and the impacts of climate change, they were getting harder and harder to ignore.
And that's when the UN stepped in, right? With
yeah.
The UNFCCC. That framework for international cooperation on climate change.
Yeah. And then came the first COP in 1995.
So this whole process of global climate negotiations,
mm-hmm.
it's been going on for over 30 years.
Over 30 years. Mm-hmm. And it hasn't always been easy. Mm-hmm. Early attempts at setting binding emission reduction targets, like the Kyoto Protocol in 97.
Oh, right.
It faced a lot of hurdles. Getting all those countries to agree on the need for action, let alone how to take action, was a huge challenge.
And the Kyoto Protocol, that ultimately failed, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, some major countries like the U.S., they never even signed on.
Okay.
And for years after that, there was a lot of frustration, a sense that, you know, things weren't moving fast enough to really address the crisis.
Right, right.
But there were also moments of hope.
Yeah.
Times when it felt like we were making progress.
And then in 2015, the Paris Agreement,
yeah.
That felt huge.
That was big. I mean, almost every country in the world came together and committed, well, pledge to limit global warming to well below 2 degrees Celsius, aiming for 1.5.
Yeah, that was a big deal.
It was a turning point.
Yeah.
And the Paris Agreement, well, it introduced this new approach, a more flexible system of nationally determined contributions, NDCs.
Okay.
Each country sets its own targets and plans for reducing emissions based on their own, you know, circumstances and capabilities.
Interesting.
It was about creating a more, I guess, inclusive and collaborative approach.
Yeah.
Recognizing that there's no, you know, one size fits all solution to this global challenge.
But even with all the all the excitement around the Paris Agreement, we haven't really seen the kind of, rapid and drastic action needed to actually meet those targets.
Yeah, that's the core issue. The Paris Agreement, it provided a framework, but it didn't really say how those actions would be financed, especially in developing countries.
Right.
They often face the worst climate impacts, but, well, they contributed the least to the problem.
So then climate justice becomes central to the whole conversation. The
Exactly.
developed world, the ones who historically emitted the most greenhouse gases, they're being asked to provide financial support to developing nations.
Yeah, and that brings us back to that loss and damage fund that was created at COP28.
Right.
It's a step towards acknowledging that responsibility,
Yes.
providing concrete support to the countries that are already experiencing those devastating impacts.
Right.
But like we said before, the funding commitments, they still fall short.
So we've got this long history of negotiations, agreements, pledges, all of that. But zooming back in on COP28, beyond those big headlines, what else stood out to you from the
You
sources?
know, one thing that struck me was, well, the focus on being inclusive, acknowledging that effective climate action, it needs diverse perspectives and lived
It's
experiences.
not just suits in a room.
No, not at all. It's about empowering communities, indigenous groups, youth activists, everyone who has a stake in building a more sustainable future.
It's like what that YouTuber was saying, right? Seeing all those different people at COP28, feeling that energy from the youth delegates, listening to indigenous leaders share their knowledge.
Exactly. It highlights something really important. COP28 wasn't just this policy wonk event. It was a cultural moment, a gathering of people from, well, from all walks of life who understand that climate change isn't just an environmental issue. It's a social justice issue, a human rights issue, a question of, well, intergenerational equity.
But, and I know this is repeating what we've said, but that YouTuber, they also expressed concerns about tokenism, right?
Oh, for sure.
Is all this talk about inclusivity real? Or is it just for show? Are those diverse voices actually being heard?
Yeah, that's a valid concern. Representation is important, sure, but it needs to lead to real power and influence. Just having a seat at the table isn't enough. Those most affected by climate change, well, they need to be actively involved in shaping the solutions.
So it's not just about inviting diverse voices to the party. It's about giving them the microphone.
Letting them DJ.
Yeah, letting
Yeah.
them like shape the playlist.
Exactly. And that means challenging existing power structures, pushing back against the status quo, and making space for those who have been, well, historically marginalized.
And this is where things get, really relevant, right? This isn't just about some far-off negotiations. It's about who shapes the future, who decides how we navigate this global crisis.
Yeah.
It's about realizing that we all of us, have a role to play, whether it's in our own lives or communities or by demanding action from our leaders.
A powerful insight, and it's something that your YouTube video really captured. Even though the creator was just one person at this huge event, their experience speaks to a much larger truth. The fight for climate action is happening everywhere, and it's being led by people from all walks of life.
So how do we bridge the gap between the global and the personal? How do we connect those high-level negotiations to our daily lives? And maybe most importantly, what can we actually DO?
Those are the million-dollar questions, and well, that's what we're going to explore next. We'll dive into what COP28 means for you, the listener, and how you can turn that concern you have into action.
All right, so we've covered a lot. Science, summits, the big picture stuff, personal stories, like the whole shebang. What does it all mean?
COP28, it was definitely messy, no way around that.
Yeah.
Complex too, but even with all that political back and forth and all those technical terms, there was a sense of hope, some real progress on big issues like, fossil fuels and financing.
Yeah.
But the journey isn't over.
No, definitely not. It's like we're standing at a crossroads, not quite game over, but the clock is ticking. Especially with the next decade being so important for climate action.
Exactly. What we need to do now is turn awareness into action. COP28 showed just how powerful collective action can be. I mean, think about all those activists and diverse voices pushing for change.
So many people. And that brings us back to you listening right now. You might be thinking, okay, yeah, this is all important, but what can I do? I'm just one person. But remember that YouTuber and what they said, they were just one person navigating this huge event,
Right.
but their story really resonated with people.
It did.
And their experiences and insights, they They connected with so many others.
Yeah, individual stories, they have this power to connect us to these larger issues. It took decades of activism, pressure, to get those words transitioning away from fossil fuels into the official agreement.
Decades. So if we can do that, imagine what's possible when we all start pushing for change, you know, using our voices, our votes, our everyday choices.
Exactly. It's like that ripple effect.
Oh, yeah, the ripple effect.
One small action can inspire others. And then those ripples, well, they become waves.
And those waves create real change.
Exactly. Even small actions, when there are millions of them, they create a, well, a force that can't be ignored.
So, okay, what does that actually look like? How can someone listening, you know, how can they move from feeling overwhelmed to doing something? What can they do?
Well, it could be something as simple as talking to your friends and family about climate change.
Oh, yeah.
Just having those conversations, sharing, you know, raising awareness.
Yeah.
It all helps to, well, to shift how we think about this.
Absolutely. And don't forget about voting. Supporting candidates who care about climate action, pushing for policies that that promote sustainability, that's how we get real change.
Couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
And there are so many other ways to get involved. Supporting organizations, working on these issues, joining local initiatives, making more sustainable choices in your life. Every little bit helps.
It all adds up. It's not about being perfect. It's about making progress. Every step, no matter how small, well, it moves us closer to a more just and sustainable future.
And that's a future worth fighting for, together.
That's it for our deep dive on COP28. From the global stage to your own doorstep, what are your biggest takeaways? What's sticking with you? We'd love to hear your thoughts. And hey, if you want to keep learning, dive into, you know, specific climate actions or even get involved with local stuff, just let us know. We're here to support you. Until next time, keep diving.